Hello and welcome to Motorsport Now. My name is Jade Paveley and today's guest is Hannah McKillop. Hannah's 2024 season has already reached lofty heights of the WRC as she joined the exclusive list of co-drivers to have competed on the legendary Monte Carlo Rally. But by no means has Hannah hit her peak. Arguably, she's just hitting her stride. With over 70 rallies under her belt, Hannah's motorsport career was born at home in Ireland. Coming home from ballet classes, still wearing her pink tutu, she would have a spanner ready for her to help her dad build Mark II escorts. Since her very first event competing on the circuit of Ireland, Hannah has won championships, rallied across the globe in America, Spain, Mexico and Austria to highlight a few. Listen up to Hannah's recap of the Monte Carlo and all things co-driver. Please do forgive a few giggles here and there. She's a very good friend and you've got to enjoy it. Enjoy the podcast. Hannah, just 2 weeks ago, you competed on arguably the most iconic rally on the rally calendar. Can you just sum up how that feels?
So that was a different Hannah. That's not the Hannah that's here right now.
This is actually take two of this question. It did come up, you said it's a different Hannah. Does it just feel like it's a different time frame? It's been a couple of weeks, so I guess the dust has settled, but it must have been such a whirlwind.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel real that that was me with those names and in that iconic place in such an amazing car with an amazing driver. It just doesn't feel real. I like with the when obviously unfortunately we retired and I went watching the next day, and when sort of the area where we were seated when those cars went past, I was just standing there in like amazement. I was like, but that wasn't me. Like, that was a different Hannah that was doing that and that was capable of doing that. So yeah, I don't know what that says about my mentality, but that's how it feels. And yeah, obviously incredible experience, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity and so proud of myself for doing it. Yeah, it was just amazing. I remember before the start, we had about 3 hours in Casino Square, and we were one of the lucky ones to get into Casino Square before the start ramp. So we were with OJ, Alvin Evan, we were with everyone in this holding area, and I was just sitting there just doing a few amendments to my pace notes, and I remember looking up and thinking, what?
It's so nice to hear from you, though, isn't it? You've admitted that you've not been calm, cool, and be like, well, actually, you know, no big deal. You actually were there looking at people that you watch on telly and watch on the coverage, and you're actually living it, doing it, being a professional navigator. I mean, everyone is so proud. It's amazing. It's lovely that you've come away with such amazing or inspiring memories to, you know, inspire other people.
Yeah, I mean, when I was there, I was really, for that event in particular, I really, really focused on being confident and feeling as if I was supposed to be there. And, well, I was supposed to be there, but, you know, not feeling like a duck out of water and not thinking, oh, all these other co-drivers know so much more than me. And I really, really worked on that before I went, and it made a huge difference. I mean, I can hand on heart say that I started that rally and went over the start ramp in Casino Square on live WRC TV, and I wasn't even nervous, and it was so refreshing. It was just such a lovely way to start and continue on a rally, and I had to work really hard on that, but when I reached that point, it was really lovely. I'm not saying I'll never be nervous again on an event, because, you know, it's part of the process, but I definitely feel as if I've made a big step forward in my mentality and approach to an event. And just, you know, there's amazing co-drivers there, you know, and people that I've watched on TV for years and looked up to and aspired to be alongside. And I just sort of took the opportunity to be alongside them and to not feel as if they were above me, is the wrong word, but to feel as if I always felt as if they knew so much more than me, and that's how they got to there. But it's the same processes, it's the same, you know, everything's the same. It's just on a far more formalized and bigger scale. And yeah, I would say to anyone that, and it's all achievable. It's all it's time controls and pace notes. It's, you know, it's it was definitely a lot less difficult than I expected. I would say national events abroad are harder than WRC events, because everything isn't written down in regulations necessarily in English, or not everything is a specified process. And that makes it more difficult, because then you're arriving to some areas and thinking, oh, I don't really know what's going to happen here. You just kind of have to wing it a little bit and see what other people are doing. Whereas in WRC, everything is so precise and so laid out ahead of time. I mean, even the tyre zone, after the start ramp, we drove 2 hours, 45 minutes. And then there's a tyre zone before the road section to the first stage. And on the road section up to the tyre zone, you got a bulletin on Sporty that said, you're in bay O, and it's the second one on the left. And it just makes everyone so much easier. So yeah, I'd say it's for anyone going to do it or wanting to do it, it's not as daunting as you think. As long as you put in the work beforehand, it's actually a real pleasure to be a part of.
Well, you've covered quite a lot of points there that I was going to ask you.
Sorry.
No, please don't apologise, because it's so great just to hear about what your thoughts were and how fresh they still are, and just to share with people listening. I think it's really, really important. But you have done plenty of national and international events up until this point, but this was your first World Rally Championship as a navigator, you know, the first round you've done as a navigator. How did you have to step up? I mean, you've started to explain a little bit about what was different, but as a navigator, what did you have to do to prepare that was different from, say, a BRC event?
Yeah, I think my fitness, I really, you know, obviously Monte Carlo isn't that many weeks after Christmas. So yeah, fitness and just mentality and eating right and making, I mean, the week before I flew out, my husband actually had COVID. So I spent, well, the first week of January, I spent in Austria on a warm-up event. The second week I was away for work. The third week I was at home, but slept in the spare room and drank and ate so many oranges and all the vitamin C that I could consume to avoid getting ill before I went.
Best customer that week.
To avoid getting ill before I went away. And yeah, it worked. So there's so many things, you know, there's the big overarching things that everyone will think of, but there's little things along the way that you maybe don't consider and you don't hear about. But yeah, there is a lot of prep. And then there's other things like working with engineers at that level. You know, there's so much more. Yes, there's a lot more done for you by the team, but there's also so much more to do as a navigator in a different way. So, for example, the team dealt with the fuel schedule and all that side of stuff and logistics and all that sort of stuff, which is normally what, you know, is kind of my forte. And I had to learn how the engineer wanted me to work, and he gave me sort of, there was three major tasks that I had to do after every single stage, and one of them especially was time critical, and also evolving to using ice notes from our ice crew or gravel crew, whichever you prefer to call it. Yeah, so there was differences, but once you get into a routine and a rhythm, it just becomes part of your process. I mean, yeah, I there was never a quiet moment on a road section, even though the road sections were so long. But that's nice. I mean, you're there to do a job, so you may as well be busy.
We touched on this in a conversation. You had the cameras on, obviously, at all times, because you guys were being aired on the rally coverage. How was that, having a camera just looking at you the whole time, listening to you? Not necessarily, because people obviously are focusing on different cameras and different coverage, but you still had that camera there. How was that? Did that?
Yeah, I mean, anything? I always remember watching the WRC coverage and thinking, that is my worst nightmare. Live coverage of me in a car, like, honestly, my worst nightmare. Just for the, I don't know, it's a lot of pressure on yourself and the external judgment as well. And so we didn't know when we got to the event that we were going to have that. It was just announced before shakedown, when the car had been through scrutineering, that was going to be added. And we were having a team meeting before the rally and before shakedown on the Wednesday. And the team said, oh yeah, and you've got the live camera, and that'll run at all times, road sections, everything, that'll be on. And I spoke just before about how I approached this event with, you know, a really calm, confident manner, and, you know, you know, I'm here, I can do it, it's no problem kind of attitude. And that was the only thing in the whole rally that kind of wobbled me a little bit. And I remember thinking, oh God, I can't, that is my worst nightmare. I can't, why am I having a live camera? Ah, like a little bit of a freak out internally in my head. And Chris said to me, this is what you're here for. And I just took that and I went, you know what, you're right. And from that moment, I forgot about the camera. And I just did my job as I would, camera or no camera. So yeah, that was pretty daunting, but you do forget about it and you do just get on with your job.
So just coming back to Monte Carlo, what made that event different from any other rally that you've done?
I think just the roads and the sheer pace of it and the spectacle, you know, everything is just incredible. The road sections, there's people on roundabouts just waving at you, and there's just people everywhere, everywhere you go. Even on the recce, every single stage start, there would be people there to get stuff signed and fans, and it is a real, real privilege to be part of it, and to get to experience that. And if I never do another, I mean, hopefully I do, but if I never get to do another WRC event, that will stay with me forever and ever. It was just incredible. And getting to interview on live TV and, you know, stuff like that, which is just completely out of my normality. But I loved it. It was amazing.
Having done the event now once, if you'd have the opportunity again, is there anything that you would do differently or anything that you would work on? It sounds like you did a really good job, and we know you did a really good job, so put you on the spot a little bit. But is there anything you are, if I'd known that, then I'll do that next time?
That's a tricky one. I would probably do a lot more work on my pace notes and really, really work on my timing and delivery. And what I mean by that is putting in, I know Alex, Chris's normal co-driver, does a lot of this, and I think I need to learn a lot from him, or I'd like to learn a lot from him about it, where he writes his notes in such a way that allows him to read them in a certain way. So with your underlining and your, you know, full stops for pauses and all that sort of stuff. And that's an area that I'd like to learn more about and learn my own craft for, because it's very much a personal thing of how you translate that when you're reading it at 120 kilometers an hour or whatever it is. So yeah, that's something I'd like to work on. And certainly at that level, every single note is absolutely, you know, critical in delivery and everything like that. So I'd like to spend a bit more time on that and speak to more people about that and develop my own sort of system around that.
That's really, really interesting, because you have done, I think, having counted on EWRC, 79 events now. Yeah, we're trying to work this out, and I think I've counted correctly. But each driver has their own unique system. You're in different cars all the time. You said you want to work on that, but it must be really hard to jump into one car and then have a different driver with a different set of notes. And you've done so many events. You know, last year was Cranford of rallies for you. How do you prepare for the different notes of drivers when you've literally sometimes got a week's difference?
Yeah, I don't really know. I try not to think about it too much, because then I think you get hung up on it. And I think just, you know, obviously, well, especially on these bigger events, you're doing maybe a two-pass recce, then you go through the DVD maybe once, maybe even twice. You know, you do get a lot of time to sort of adjust to each driver's style and their note system. So yeah, I try not to think about it too much, and luckily I seem to be able to adapt. There are some things that are slightly different. For example, in Chris's notes, half in, for example, is the length of the corner is the half and the in is the cut. Whereas, say, on Gary Pearson's notes, the half in is a half in cut and not the length of the corner. So obviously that affects how you're reading the corner, because the half is slightly longer, so it's a little bit more of a delay before the next corner, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, just changing into stuff like that takes a little bit of time to get your brain to read that intuitively. Again, I spoke to Alex about that before I went to Monte Carlo, and he said the same. And I think that's where my previous point of adjusting my notes for the style of notes is something that I would really like to work on, to make that come a little bit quicker.
I think it's amazing what you do. I think it's, I couldn't do it. Oh, well, and you're never sick either, which I think is incredible.
No, I would feel a bit queasy the other time in a road car, but never in a rally car, no.
No. And now it's time for the misfire round, where I ask quick round questions, but it's never that quick because we end up chatting about it. Leave 2024. So which is your preferred type of forest, a Welsh forest or a Scottish forest?
Scottish, because I led the Scottish Championship last year. And that's where I got my first win. Special.
Yes, definitely. No, for sure. Yeah, we'll definitely come to that as well. I'm really excited to hear more about that. What's your favourite rally that you've done so far?
Monte Carlo has to be.
I mean, you can't top it, can you, really? If you do, then you're coming back here for another interview. The best car that you've done a rally in?
Oh, that's a tough one, because I've been in such a range of cars. I mean, the new Skoda Rally 2 that we used in Austria and in Monte Carlo this year is just incredible. I mean, it's so incredibly built, purpose-built. The screen in the car, which sort of controls everything, you can watch your onboard on the screen. It's just so fantastic and just such a pleasure to learn and be in. But then, you know, you have your Mark II Escorts, and like I sat with Dan Minnell last year, and it was just such a work of art and such a beautiful car, and he'd spent so much time on it and just really beautiful. And John Crawford, he's got a modified modern Mark II Escort, and yeah, it's a pleasure to be in any of these cars. But yeah, I'd probably say the Skoda Rally 2 is just a level above anything I've been in before.
What's the most important item in your navigator's bag?
My tire pressure gauge.
Yeah, I think I've got one of those upstairs, actually.
Gets a lot of use.
You had that super cool app, actually. I wouldn't mind if you just explained about that. You had it.
Yeah, so in Monte Carlo, the engineer, Paolo from Skoda, he was fantastic. He was so good. So he met me on the test the Sunday before. And he came up to me and he says, I have a list of jobs for you. You're not allowed to complain to me until after the rally. And I thought, okay, yep.
Know exactly where you stood with
him. So I knew where I stood. I thought, that's fine. You give me a list of jobs, I'll learn it and I'll do it. No problem. So he gave me this little box, and it had in it USB sticks, memory card, spare dust caps for the wheels, a little reader for the data card to go into my phone, a spare battery in case one of the intercoms went down, and it was just like a little survival box. It was amazing. Fun. And then he handed me this tire pressure gauge, which looked like the most expensive tire pressure gauge I've ever seen in my life. And I thought, oh my word, he's going to give me this for the next week to look after, and it looks really expensive. So basically, it's a little tire pressure gauge. And before the rally, he asked me what order I do my tire pressures in. So I always do front right, front left, rear right, always in that order. Because it just makes reporting back to the team when you're doing it via WhatsApp a lot easier. So he had set up the tire pressure gauge in that order, and basically you go around and you take one single reading off every tire after the stage or before the stage or whenever he asks for it. And then you hold it against your phone and it scans it into an app on your phone, and then you just send it to him, and he has it puts in the location of where you took it, so temperature, like everything. It's really, really clever, so quick, so simple, but really, really clever and really effective. Rather than reporting, sort of writing down, sometimes mistakes can happen when you're typing, especially if it's, you know, you're doing it in a rush or whatever. Yeah, that was a really clever piece of kit that I quite enjoyed using, but I dread to think how much it cost.
Well, so you left one here, actually, at some point. Put it on your Christmas list, Megan. Do you prefer doing rally stages in the day, or do you prefer night stages?
There's something special about night stages. I've done more and more night stages over the past sort of 6 months. Yeah, I don't really mind. Night stages add their own complications. You're working with the feeling of the car a lot more rather than what you can see. Although in the Rally 2 cars, you don't really have much time to see anything. Yeah, I don't know. There's something special about sitting on the start line of a night stage, I'd say.
What's the weirdest note you've ever had to read? You don't have to tell me who it was. Or maybe you should.
Yeah, I think I should. let me think. Weirdest note. Gary Pearson had a note on Malcolm Wilson last year, which was Christmas, at Christmas, and it was just a little Christmas tree.
Okay.
And then Ross Leach, your husband.
Is that my husband?
Yeah. Every rally, he had to have a kinky bit. That was his favourite note.
If you could have one snack in your nav bag, what would it be?
Chris and I, over the past two rallies, became partial to he'd have a Snickers and I'd have a Snickers and he'd have a Milky Way, and that was like our little tiny, tiny snack size ones. So yeah, I'd say a little tiny bit of
just one chocolate. Of them.
Yeah, just a little hit. Yeah,
just a little.
Yeah,
one.
Say you're doing like a three stage loop. Yeah, just sort of after the second stage before you go to the third one.
You just athletes, a little bit. Just having that one tiny one. Yeah. Is very helpful. What would be your ideal rally day if you woke up in the morning? How would it go until the first stage?
Until the first stage.
Yeah,
I got into lovely routine last year on the Scottish Championship. We were very fortunate that my in-laws had a motorhome, which they're now selling, and I can't talk about it because it makes me sad. But so we got to take the motorhome to every Scottish event. So my husband was also competing. So him and I would go the night before, and then Jock and I would go through the notes in the motorhome the night before, and then Josh and I'd wake up in the morning. And I love the motorhome. It's my favourite place to be, no matter where we are, even if it's in a muddy field that's a service area and there's generators rumbling beside us. And he'd bring me a cup of tea in bed, and then I'd get up, get dressed, and I think it's just that comfort of knowing you're there and you don't have to sort of travel to the service area or whatever and all that time consuming stuff. And then I would have Mark's used to do like a little fruit box, and it has mango, watermelon and pineapple in it, and I'd have one bit of each, and maybe a bagel with some cream cheese or something on it, and that would be my breakfast. And I'd always have the same, and then at lunch I'd have pasta and the rest of the fruit, and that just became like a lovely routine. Or Jock and I would sometimes make overnight oats, and then we'd enjoy them in the morning, maybe watch a stage. And yeah, I liked that. That was that sort of became a nice routine. And Josh and I always listened to a song by the Scissor Sisters every single morning of the Scottish Rally Championship, and that started because on our way to the Snowman Rally, which was the first round of the championship, it just happened to come on in the motorhome on our way there. And I don't know why or what was going on, but we were like belting this song out, and we played it over and over and over, so that became our song. So we played it every single morning before each Scottish Championship round. It was like a little ritual.
Well, it obviously worked because you had such a successful season. It didn't quite finish how you wanted it, but can you just tell us about that last day that you had doing the Scottish Championship with Jock Armstrong, because it was so close.
Yeah, it was really close. I mean, so the first I hadn't done a test with Jock, I hadn't done anything, and we went to the Snowman Rally, which was the first round of the championship, and we won it, and I never expected to win it, and that was my first outright win, and it was just such a lovely day, and everything just felt so good in the car. Notes felt good, car felt good, Jock was just amazing, and yeah, everything just clicked. And we then continued throughout the year, and we had another win, and we had a couple of seconds and thirds, and we led the championship all year until the very last round, which was the Carlisle stages. And on the first stage, was it the first stage or the second stage, I can't remember, it was early on in the day anyway, we hit a rock. And yeah, that was deflating, but we knew we had to keep going because we knew that David Henderson had to actually beat us to win, and there was some sort of odd circumstance where they had to actually win it for his co-driver to win the championship, which I didn't know going into it. Someone told me at service. I don't like to study these things too much. I like to just see what happens on the day. So going into the last stage, I think Michael Binney was winning the rally, actually, or Mark McCulloch, or maybe John Wink. It might have been John Wink. Anyway, it had been changing all day. But David wasn't winning the rally. So going into the last stage, there was a chance that I could still be co-driver champion, even though I did want to win it with Jock. It kind of took the shine off it that he wasn't going to win it with me. But yeah, on the last stage, there was a change in the standings, and David won the event outright, so they both won the Scottish Championship. So obviously delighted for them. It was great competition all year, but obviously gutted. Yeah, I don't usually take things like that too hard, but that was a hard one to swallow after leading it all year. But we'll go again. Jock was amazing and just such a pleasure to sit with. And I wish we could have got the win together on our first year together.
Well, we'll see what happens next time. Yeah. So this is a little bit of a controversial thing to say to a navigator. Sometimes people who don't necessarily know rallying think that the role of a navigator could be seen as slightly secondary, and they are often overlooked. But navigators bring so much to the table. But I guess it's changed an awful lot since your first rally doing the Circuit of Ireland 10 years ago to doing the Monty now. How has that role changed for you over time? What have you had to add to become that complete navigator that you are today?
I mean, I think you should learn at least one thing from every event. I mean, if I look back at myself, even 12 months ago in the Malcolm Wilson Rally with Gary last year, I mean, I was a terrible navigator compared to what I am now.
And you're too hard yourself.
Yeah, but
you put so much hard work in.
But you should see the faults in yourself. And I hope that this time next year, I look back on myself and I think, even though I feel as if I've made massive progress, I hope I look back on myself this time next year and think, oh, Hannah, what were you doing? Why did you not think to do that? Or, you know, I think Josh always says it's about trying to make the process as simple as possible and foolproof and bombproof as possible. And I think sometimes the most obvious things are right in front of us and we don't even see them until something goes wrong. And then you think, why didn't I do that way? And every single event that I do, I learn something, or something happens that you're not expecting and you have to be resilient and fix it or adapt to it or make the best of it. And I used to think that in this role that there was sort of a pinnacle, like a point you would reach where you were comfortable and where, you know, right, I've reached that level now. And I've come to realise sort of in the past year that that is not the case at all. Yes, I've got to WRC to an extent, but I don't feel as if you ever reach a level. I don't think that the co-drivers in WRC one, I don't think that they would feel like that either. I don't think they would feel, right, I've completed it now, I know everything, and this is just easy now. Because I think every rally will throw something at you that you're not expecting, whether it be mechanical or an off or something that the organisers have put to you or that's something that you weren't expecting, or there's always something. There's so many variables in rallying. But there's always something that you can learn from in every event. So yeah, I think I've stopped believing that there's a pinnacle and believing that there's a comfortable spot. Yes, there's a confidence and there's a, you know, knowledge. The more knowledge you have, the sort of simpler everything feels. So there's definitely that side of it, but I don't feel that there's an end point as such anymore.
The role of a navigator isn't just reading notes, and it would be very unwise to say it's just they read out the notes, the directions. What does being a navigator include now for you?
It's organisation. I would say reading notes is probably the smallest part of my job, even though it's the most important to an extent. I would say it's a very small percentage of what I do. I mean, the organisation, logistics, communication is massive.
Who between the team?
Driver, team, engineers, the organisers, the tyre company, the championship people. You know, communicate. My phone in the lead up to a rally is just WhatsApp after WhatsApp after WhatsApp after WhatsApp of organisation and communication. So yeah, I'd say that is a massive, massive part of it. And that in some ways, as you move up, gets easier because teams deal with more for you. But I would say if you can take on as much as you can comfortably without letting the fundamentals slip, when you're sort of doing circuit level or national level stuff, that will stand you in really good stead. Because even though there's someone else doing that job for you, it's so important to understand it so that you can check what they're doing. Because there has been quite a few times where someone has in the team has said, oh, I've arranged such and such, and it's this, that, and the other. And I'm thinking, well, that's not right, because I've already looked at that. And then having that confidence to say, no, I've looked at that, and I think that might be slightly out. Could we maybe do it this way or X, Y, and Z? So I'd say try and take on maybe every 3 events, take on something small that's new. I mean, up until last year, I never used the timers on my watch. Because on international timing, they're easy to use, but on our timing in the UK, they're just not the most straightforward to use. So I never used them. And Josh always says, use your timers, it'll make your life so much easier. But I just felt as if I couldn't, that was another thing. And I was so scared of doing it wrong and then getting a penalty. And I felt as if it was another thing that I couldn't take on. So I got to a point last year and I thought, right, actually, I think it's actually when I was going out to Spain, maybe. I can't remember. And I thought, right, I'm going to give this a bash. I'm not going to rely on it, but I'm going to try and add it into my routine. And I think you build up, well, certainly I work everything in routine. So I have all sort of a process of like, you prioritise the most important and then move down. And yeah, little things to get. And once I get into that routine of using the timers, it did make my life so much easier. But 2 years ago, I couldn't have taken that on. I couldn't have, you know, been so comfortable with everything else that's going on to take on that extra thing. So I'd say try and maybe it's the start of the year, say to yourself, right, I see someone else doing this. I'd really like to try that. Don't rely on getting it perfect the first time you try it, but just build it into your routine. I think most navigators all have sort of a routine of some form, and just try and add it into your routine and slowly build those things up, because then when you move up, all those little things just make your life so much easier. I mean, another thing, using KMZ files during recce, or even during some road sections if it's really busy, and you can say to the driver, I'm going to keep an eye on the road book, but if I give you this and you keep an eye on that, well, not always keep an eye on that, but but it gives you sort of a backup. On like the Generali, you know, it was quite short road sections, there was ice notes to do between the stages, there was tire changes due between the stages, plus follow your road book, plus get your time card right. And maybe, you know, Chris would ask a detail about the stage or ask me to change something in the stage or whatever. So having that map there to just glance down at and go, yeah, and I'm right. It's just anything you can do to give yourself confidence and make your life a little bit easier.
That's really good advice. So with your 2024 season, what have you got planned? Are you allowed to share your plans?
I don't have any firm plans at the minute, which is really not, I mean, to be fair, that's how I start most years. I'm not one for, I think last year with the Scottish Championship was probably the first year that I'd set out with a definite championship. I'm not one for chasing championship titles, and you know,
what do you chase? What are you aiming for?
What makes me happy about rallying is working together and getting that feeling of that click in the car and doing a good job and finishing. You know, if I can make the day easy for the driver, that's like winning a rally for me. Of course, winning the rally is always really nice. Don't get me wrong, winning last year was just incredible. I really want couple more wins if I can. But it's about, for me, it's about the driver, to be honest. And
in what sense, sorry to interrupt, but in what sense it's about the driver?
I feel like I am there for the driver. Because you are, because, you know, if there's no driver, there's no point to your job. I feel to make the driver happy and make them enjoy, it's the wrong word, but to trust in you. I think trust is massively about trust. And for them to feel comfortable and, you know, I am there for them. I'm not there for my own success. That has never been my... Yes, success has come as part of it, but you're a team, you know? Without the driver, I couldn't be successful, and without me, they couldn't be successful. So it's a team, and I'm there for them. And equally, you know, to an extent, they're there for me as well.
I hate to bring this question up because I get asked about it a lot, but I think it's really important to stress that you are still one of the only females who has competed at Monte Carlo, to be honest. And I do think there's more girls coming through the sport, which is great news. But did you give that a second thought, or did it actually stand out a little bit? Do you feel a responsibility doing these events
before? Yeah, I mean, it's not something I tend to focus on because I don't see it as important, and I don't think it should make a difference to where if you work hard, you'll get to where you want to be. Mm. But for the Monte Carlo, I did have a look at who had done it before as a female from the UK or Ireland, and it's a very short list. So yeah, I do feel a great sense of pride about that. And there was a lovely woman from Good News Monaco who did a lovely, lovely article about me, and she had just seen that I was coming to do it and took a real interest. And that was just lovely to get that sort of recognition. That was special because that is quite a short list, and I think that is definitely one of those things maybe 30, 40 years down the line that I'll still be quite a cool thing to have done, I hope.
I think it'll always be a cool thing to say, but it's funny just talking about the women in motorsport part of rallying in motorsport. I say I hesitate to ask these questions about being a woman in sport because I used to think it was a thing that people focused on, but actually it's really important to highlight that we're going out and doing stuff. You're going out there and doing a great job, and I think you should be very proud. But what does your mum say about it? Tell us a little bit about your mum. Does she mind you rallying? I know your dad's obviously very much into motorsport and building Mark IIs. And
mum wasn't the biggest, I'd say she's still not the biggest fan of rallying. Mum used to never sort of just deny that it was happening, and I'd be guilty of not telling her I didn't compete and things like that. But now she's very much on board. She follows everything, and between my dad and Josh, they keep her very, very well updated. She always sends me a message before a rally and says, "Don't go too fast." And I say, "But Mum, that's the point of it." But I've sent her some in-car and stuff, and she just goes, "Oh, Hannah." That's all you get from her. I try not to scare her too much or send her too much in-car, but there's still a bit that I'll send her and share with her. I think now the more sort of getting places and things like that, I think she is really proud of me, which is lovely. It was a phone call that I'll not forget, was getting to ring Mum and Dad, and I said to them, "Oh, do you know the Monte Carlo rally?" And Dad went, "Yeah." And I went, "Well, I'm doing it." And they were like, "No way, Dad!" You know, they were like so excited, whereas usually they're not. They're like, "All right, another rally, where are you off to now?" That was a special phone call.
I can imagine that must have been just brilliant that you were just so ecstatic to make that call. Last question for you, Hannah, because I've taken up a lot of your time, so thank you very much. What is the one piece of advice that you would give to anybody else wanting to take the same path that you have in motorsport, becoming a navigator?
Find confidence, but don't be full of yourself. And trust your gut instinct. If you don't feel something's right, or you're like, "Oh, I'm not sure about doing that event," or something doesn't quite align for you, don't do it. That's fine. There'll be other opportunities. You know, at the moment, I have a rally in Spain next week. and I'm doing the Malcolm Wilson rally, and after that I have no rallies in my diary. And there have been offers, and they just haven't felt right. I mean, I had an amazing opportunity to do massive championships and stuff this year, and there was a few things that just weren't right about it for me, and I think it comes with age, but I was just like, nah, it's just, I took a long time to think about it, but it's just not right for me. And if that means that I do no other rallies this year, then that's fine, but it wasn't right for me. And you have to trust your gut instinct, because you have to enjoy it. That is the number one thing. If you're not enjoying it, get out, go and find something else.
Thank you very much, Hannah. That was absolutely brilliant.
Well, what an interview. Thank you very much, Hannah, for all that time spending with me as I quizzed you all about Monte Carlo and all things co-driver. Hannah has actually got a season planned now. She's flying off to Hungary to do the first round of the Junior ERC, sitting next to Eva Rafferty. So every bit of luck to them. I really hope it goes well. Thank you so much for listening. Follow me on socials at Jade Paveley Motorsport and listen up for the next podcast. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.